TED Talks are recorded live at the TED Conference and produced with WNYC New York Public Radio. This episode features the author of The Design of Everyday Things, Don Norman. TED Talks are made possible through the support of BMW. Here's Don Norman.
Let me tell you a little bit about me before I start, because there's an old me and there's a new me. And so I'm sort of famous. I was a cognitive scientist and studied memory and attention and how the brain worked and the mind worked. And I'm famous for doors you can't open. And so I somehow became famous for trying to make things usable and being cantankerous about things you couldn't work. If I were the old me, what I would do is I would say, you know, we all got this alarm clock as a free gift in that big box, and it's a wonderful alarm clock. It's actually pretty pretty when you look at it, and it's got to be easy to use because it only has two buttons. One says mode, and the other says set. And so if you're in Colorado and you fly to California and you want to set the clock back 1 hour, you just push the mode until you're in the right mode, and then you push the set, and it goes slowly around 23 hours. And I discovered if you want to turn off the alarm clock, I would have said, but I won't say it. If you want to turn off the alarm clock at 5 o'clock in the morning, you wake up, you want to turn it off, and you push the mode switch. And thank you very much, but I have an alarm clock. Well, that's the old me. I don't do that anymore. The new me is beauty. Yeah, you know, people used to say, no, Norman's okay, but if you followed what he said, everything would be usable, but it would be ugly. Well, I didn't have that in mind, so my new life is trying to understand what beauty is about, and pretty, and emotions. And it's interesting, there's been a huge amount of work in emotions. So this is a Philippe Starck juicer produced by Alessi, and it's just neat, it's fun. It's so much fun, I have it in my house, but I have it in the entryway. I don't use it to make juice. In fact, I bought the gold-plated special edition, and it comes with a little slip of paper that says, don't use this juicer to make juice. The acidic, well, the acid will ruin the gold plating. But beneath it is a wonderful knife. It's a global cutting knife made in Japan. And it's just, look at the shape. It's just wonderful to look at. Second of all, it's really beautifully balanced. It holds, it feels well. And third of all, it's so sharp, it just cuts. It's a delight to use. And so it's got everything, right? It's beautiful, and it's functional. And I can tell you stories about it, which makes it reflective. And so you will see I have a theory of emotion, and those are the three components, and it's got it all. The thing that we often leave out is fun. So Hiroshi Ishii and his group at the MIT Media Labs took a ping pong table and a projector above it, and on the ping pong table they projected an image of water and fish swimming in it. And as you play ping pong, whenever the ball hits part of the table, the ripples spread out and the fish run away. But of course then the ball hits the other side and the ripples are the poor fish. They can't find any peace and quiet. And is that a good way to play ping pong? No. But is it fun? Yeah. Yeah. So, or look at Google. If you type in, say, emotion and design, you get 10 pages of results. So Google just took their logo and they spread it out. Instead of saying, you got 73,000 results, this is 1 through 20, next, they just give you as many O's as there are pages. It's really simple and subtle. I bet a lot of you have seen it and never noticed it. That's a subconscious mind. Sort of notices it. It probably is kind of pleasant, and you didn't know why. And it's just clever. And of course, what's especially good is you type design and emotion. The first response out of those 10 pages is my website. Now, the weird thing is Google lies. Because if I type design and emotion, it says, you don't need the and. We do it anyway. So I type design, emotion. And my website wasn't first again. It was third. Oh, well, different story. There was this wonderful review in the New York Times about the Mini Cooper automobile. It said, you know, this is a car that has lots of faults. Buy it anyway. It's so much fun to drive. And if you look at the inside of the car, I mean, I loved it. I wanted to see. I rented it. So this is me taking a picture while my son is driving. And the inside of the car, the whole design is fun. It's round. It's neat. The controls work wonderfully. So that's my new life. It's all about fun. But I'm trying to understand it. So I am a scientist also. So I've been trying to understand what's going on here. And I really have the feeling that pleasant things work better. And that never made any sense to me. Until I finally figured out, look, I'm going to put a plank on the ground. So imagine I have a plank about 2 feet wide and 30 feet long, and I'm going to walk on it. And you see, I can walk on it without looking. And I can go back and forth, and I can jump up and down. No problem. Now I'm going to put the plank 300 feet in the air, and I'm not going to go near it, thank you. Intense fear paralyzes you. It actually affects the way the brain works. So Paul Saffold, before he gave his talk, said that he didn't really have it down until just a few days or even hours before the talk, and that anxiety was really helpful in causing him to focus. And that's what fear and anxiety does. It causes you to be what's called depth-first processing, to focus, not to be distracted, and I couldn't force myself across that. Now, some people can, circus workers, steel workers, but it really changes the way you think. And then a psychologist, Alice Eisen, did this wonderful experiment. She brought students in to solve problems. So she'd bring people into the room, and there'd be a string hanging down here, and a string hanging down here, and it was an empty room, except there'd be a table with a bunch of crap on it, some papers and scissors and stuff. And she'd bring them in, and she'd say, this is an IQ test, and it determines how well you do in life. Would you tie those two strings together? So they'd take one string, and they'd pull it over here, and they couldn't reach the other string. Still can't reach it. And basically, none of them could solve it. You bring in a second group of people, and you say, before we start, I got this box of candy, and I don't eat candy. Would you like the box of candy? And it turns out they liked it, and it made them happy. Not very happy, but a little bit of happy. And guess what? They solved the problem. And it turns out that when you're anxious, you squirt neurotransmitters in the brain, which focuses you, makes you depth first. And when you're happy, what we call positive valence, you squirt dopamine into the prefrontal lobes, which makes you a breath-first problem solver. You're more susceptible to interruption. You do out-of-the-box thinking. That's what, in fact, brainstorming is about, right? With brainstorming, we make you happy, we play games, and we say no criticism, and you get all these weird, neat ideas. But in fact, if that's how you always were, you'd never get any work done, because you'd be working along and say, oh, I got a new way of doing it. So to get work done, you got to set a deadline, right? And you got to be anxious. So the brain works differently, and if you're happy, things work better because you're more creative. You get a little problem, you say, yeah, I'll figure it out. No big deal. So anyway, I've been working with my colleagues in the Department of Psychology at Northwestern who study emotion. And so I have a simple theory of emotion. Now, this is Marvin Minsky, who's going to talk next, who has a real theory of emotion. And he's going to tell you, if he says anything at all, that my theory is simple-minded and too simple. And he's right. Because when I'm a scientist, I know the brain is complex and very, very difficult. But when I'm a designer, I want to simplify it because I want something you can make use of. And we have co-adapted through biology to like bright colors. That's especially good that mammals and primates like fruits and bright plants because you eat the fruit and you thereby spread the seed, usually by traveling and defecating. And we like sweet tastes. We like warm places. We don't like heavy crowds. We dislike bitter tastes. We dislike loud sounds. We dislike hot temperatures, cold temperatures. We dislike scolding voices. We dislike frowning faces. We like symmetrical faces, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the visceral level. And in design, you can express visceral in lots of ways, like the choice of type fonts and the red for hot, exciting. Or the 1963 Jaguar. It's actually a crummy car. It falls apart all the time, but the owners love it, and it's beautiful. It's in the Museum of Modern Art. It's all about the visceral experience. The middle level of processing is the behavioral level, and that's actually where most of our stuff gets done. Visceral is subconscious, you're unaware of it. Behavioral is subconscious, you're unaware of it. Almost everything we do is subconscious. I'm walking around the stage. I am not attending to the control of my legs. I'm doing a lot. Most of my talk is subconscious. It's been rehearsed and thought about a lot. Most of what we do is subconscious. Automatic behavior, skilled behavior is subconscious, controlled by the behavioral side. And behavioral design is all about feeling in control, which includes usability and understanding, but also the feel and heft. That's why the global knives are so neat. They're so nicely balanced, so sharp. You really feel you're in control of the cutting. Cognition is about understanding the world. Emotion is about interpreting it, saying good, bad, safe, dangerous, and getting us ready to act, which is why the muscles tense or relax. And so that's why we can tell the emotion of somebody else, because their muscles are acting subconsciously. And the third level is reflective, which is, if you like, the superego. It's a little part of the brain that has no control over what you do, no control over the doesn't see the senses, doesn't control the muscles. It looks over what's going on. It's that little voice in your head that's watching and saying, that's good, that's bad, or why are you doing that? I don't understand. It's that little voice in your head that's the seat of consciousness. And here's a great reflective product. Owners of the Hummer have said, you know, I've owned many cars in my life, all sorts of exotic cars, but never have I had a car that attracted so much attention. See, it's about attention. It's about their image. It's not about the car. Or an expensive watch, so that you can impress people and say, oh, gee, I didn't know you had that watch. As opposed to this one, which is a pure behavioral watch, which probably keeps better time than the $13,000 watch I just showed you. But it's ugly. And what's neat is sometimes you pit one emotion against the other, the visceral fear of falling against the reflective statement saying, it's okay, it's safe. It's safe. And if the amusement park were rusty and falling apart, you'd never go on the ride. So it's pitting one against the other. And so that's the new me. I'm only saying positive things from now on.
That was Don Norman, recorded at the TED Conference in Monterey, California, February 2003. TED Talks are produced by WNYC New York Public Radio for TED and made possible, in part, through the support of BMW. For more information on TED, visit TED.com.